Hello, friends. This is your friend Kent C. Dodds, and I'm joined by my friend Mark DeGlesh. I think I said your name wrong, Mark. Is that right?
Yes, it's DelGlesh.
DelGlesh. Cool. Say hi, Mark.
Hi, everyone.
I asked you to say hi, Mark. That's okay. So everyone's good too. I am excited to talk with Mark. Mark and I, we've known each other for, goodness, for as long as I've been, even before I did React, actually, because I started using CSS modules when I was in AngularJS land. I think I may have been one of the first AngularJS users to use CSS modules, actually, because I don't think it was ever super widely used in the AngularJS world. But I jumped on board that so quick. I was so excited about CSS modules. And the reason that I mentioned that is because Mark here is the one who created the whole thing. So anyway, I don't want to jump ahead of Mark. Why don't you introduce yourself to our friends here, and then we can get jazzing out around CSS.
First of all, that's cool about the Angular thing. I had no idea about that. That's awesome. As I said, I'm Mark DelGlesh, and I work in Melbourne, Australia at a company called Seek. But as Kent said, I'm most well known for co-creating CSS modules. And yeah, I've been active in the React space and CSS space for quite a while now. And I'm still trying to come up with new ways to rewrite CSS for some reason. I can't let it go.
Yeah.
So here I am today.
Yeah, that's great. You've been working at Seek for a very long time. How long have you been there?
I've been there for, let's see, I've got to count now. 2013 I joined. So what's that now?
Is that 8 years?
Yeah, it goes wild. Fast.
I mean, you're talking to my dad, who's an accountant, he's like, yeah, you're just getting started, young buck. But like in the tech world, 8 years is a long time. That's impressive.
Well, I get this, you know, I get the space to do this kind of work, and it makes me happy. So, you know, I'm not in a hurry to go somewhere else anytime soon.
Yeah, I'm sure there are plenty of people who would like you to be in a hurry to go somewhere else. But yeah, that's awesome. And you have done really cool things. So we're going to talk about this thing that you've built called Vanilla Extract, but you've done a lot of other things. CSS modules came out of Seek as well, right? Like that was work you were doing at Seek.
Yeah, so we were pretty early on React at the time. For the server rendering was really what got us interested in it. And we were big on components, you know, immediately as React kind of trains you to be, really. And we were scoping all our CSS to our components, but we were doing it manually with BEM namespacing. And then Webpack introduced opt-in local scoping, where it was like a special syntax to locally scope a class. And I made a PostCSS plugin to just do that for every class automatically, which effectively became CSS modules. And so, you know, I worked with Tobias Coppers, who created Webpack, to basically make that official. I suggested it have a name and not just be a feature in Webpack, you know, be a first class concept. And we've since seen, you know, why that paid off, because now it's implemented everywhere, even outside of Webpack, which is really cool.
Yeah, CSS modules was huge. I loved using CSS modules. It was helped me immensely in my AngularJS project. Eventually, I wandered around in CSS and JS land. Now I'm kind of hanging out with Tailwind, loving that. It's been kind of a fun journey with CSS. Why do you think we're you mentioned earlier that you're always futzing around with CSS and trying to do things in different ways. Like, why can't we just land on something? Why wasn't BEM good enough? Like, why do we keep on changing stuff?
It's a good question. Off the top of my head, I would say it's because it's really hard to manage at scale, and it always feels like we're never quite there. There's always some other problem. I mean, it's like anything in tech, really. Like, you never feel like you've 100% solved something. There's always something not quite there. And I think with CSS in particular, what's pushed us to keep going is the move into design systems and having CSS be part of a big component system that is operating at scale. And then consumers of those components may also want to write their own custom styles based on the primitives that are in the system. And then another layer on top of that that's more recent for us is TypeScript. So now you've got this whole angle of, well, I want type safety through all of this as well.
Yeah.
And that completely makes you rethink, what are we doing with CSS? You know, it's so dynamic compared to our React code if it's in TypeScript, that, you know, how do I join the dots on that one?
Oh yeah, totally. Well, and you talk about design systems. That's another thing that you do at Seek. Is that like your main thing? Is you're in charge of the design system, and that's kind of where these libraries and technologies come out of?
Well, yeah. So we're on a front end. We're called the front end practices team, and we look after all the shared front end tooling. So that includes the design system, but we've also got build tooling and so on, and vanilla extract now that is part of that as well.
Yeah, that's very similar to what I was doing right before I ended PayPal. So I know that lots of the things that you were going through and were thinking about, sounds like you've been doing that for a really long time, though, and you probably have some really awesome experience. Do you want to just link drop the Seek design system? Because that's open source, and I know that I've borrowed stuff from that.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that we've really pushed for is even when the code's not designed for public consumption, like our design system, it's not for other people to use, really. I mean, obviously you can use it if you really want to, but it's not designed for that. I think its strength is that it's not trying to make everyone in the world happy. Its strength is that it's purely for Seek, and that's it. You know, it means we can say no to lots of things and make it only do the things we want it to do. And, you know, we can make it flexible internally if we want. So we can, you know, we can still design to have a flexible system. It's just that flexibility it shouldn't necessarily be at the public API.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that makes tons of sense. I was just looking at your GitHub repo or org for Seek OSS, and you have 98 repos in there. So Seek is like way into open source, which is super cool. And one of the one I was looking for is the Playroom thing that you've got in here, which I'd love for you to describe. I know that we're not quite getting into the CSS stuff exactly, but this is just one thing I wanted to mention really quick. Can you tell us what Playroom is all about?
Yeah, Playroom is an in-browser JSX. I call it a design tool. I don't know if that throws people off, but basically it's closest to something like a code sandbox. But it's trying to be, I would say its key difference from something like Code Sandbox is it's trying to be more approachable for non-developers, both in terms of like being able to read the code first and foremost. Because at the moment, at the bottom of the screen, there's a code area and you write JSX, just JSX. You don't write, you know, a React component. You don't write a JavaScript file. You write just JSX. And internally, we wrap that in everything it needs in order to render. And so and as you type, it renders into the iframes at the top of the screen. And what's cool as well for us, because we have a themed system, is you can customize the widths of you have multiple frames visible. You can customize the widths of those and you can customize the themes. So it lets you write JSX and see what it looks like responsively across multiple themes at the same time. And because it's just JSX, you can sit with a designer or send a link to a designer, and it is actually approachable because we design those JSX, those component APIs, we design them to be as human readable as possible. We design them to use design terminology rather than just our own made up terms. We try to make sure that we align with designers. And so it ends up being this really nice tool for designing in the browser, communicating between designers and developers, showing examples of what our system can do. And internally, as maintainers of a design system, we use it as a way to kind of test out what the user experience of our components is. Like you get some way towards this with something like a storybook, I suppose. But the difference here is it's trying to simulate like the design process, you know, rather than I'm not creating a bunch of canned examples. I actually want to see, can I go from a blank page to a full UI quickly, easily? Does the code make sense? That sort of thing. Like, so it's a really nice tool for bringing all of these different things together.
Yeah. And so you can like bring in some of your layout components, and then here's a button here and a card and whatever else, all within the JSX, and then hand that off to the developer who wires up logic and stuff, right?
Yeah. And a key thing there, right, is like you don't get to write a style sheet. I mean, we're talking about CSS today, right? You're really pushed, the tool really pushes you towards having a complete component library. Because you mentioned layout, right? We didn't have layout components at the beginning, and that stuck out as a, like, Playroom helped surface that, right? Because it's like, I want to build up a UI, but I feel like I have to put these low level, like in our case, a box component. I have to put these box components everywhere, and my UI is just box, 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 box. And our mentality was, if I'm doing like a high level UI and I'm having to reach for these primitives, we've missed something. Like there's something, we might not know what it is yet, but there's something missing here.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And Yeah, then I would encourage people to go take a look at the Braid design system, because there are a lot of interesting things. Like there's the stack component and different things, especially with the layout stuff. So then actually my next question is then, if you have all of these layout components, haven't you then like solved all CSS problems that your teams are going to have? Like, why do you need a library that your teams are going to be using, or open source something that people can use, if you can just encapsulate it all in a design system?
Yeah, I think so. The way I think about this is like your North Star that I should never have to write CSS. Like in a perfect world, I pull in a component library. All the components are there to look and feel like all the standard patterns of my brand or whatever it happens to be. And I should just be able to compose those up and my UI is done. That's perfect world. In reality, of course, it's never quite that perfect. There's always going to be, like, in this particular product, on this particular page, there's some very niche thing we need to do. And maybe it requires something a bit more tricky as well. Like there's some responsive style like that is very particular. Like, we would not have created this concept ahead of time. It's very particular.
Yeah, and you wouldn't want to include it in a design system either. It's too one-off-ish.
Yeah, that's right. Like, to me, a big part of having a design system is being able to recognize those things and say it doesn't belong in the core. Like, that's just a custom thing you need to build, and that's fine. But we want to make sure that when you drop down a level to write custom styles, we have good APIs for that as well, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. So you're never going to be able to get away with not having one-off styles. And so you need to have a nice way to accomplish that. And that's kind of where I guess CSS modules came from. It was a really nice way to accomplish that. Vanilla Extract is a lot more like CSS modules than it is CSS and JS. Although you do kind of refer to it as CSS and TypeScript, which I think is fun. Seek, it sounds like, kind of skipped over the CSS and JS craze. Why would you say that is? Like, what made you decide that you didn't want to bring in something like Emotion or Glamorous, for that matter, for doing CSS and JS in your products?
Well, the first thing to call out is I've always been a fan of CSS and JS from the beginning. I was playing around with Radium and JSS in the early days, Aphrodite. I even helped design the Glamorous logo. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, thank you. You know,
yeah, I also wrote a very popular article called A Unified Styling Language and converted that into a talk where I was trying to sell CSS devs on the idea of CSS and JS. So
I even reference that post a lot.
yeah, exactly. So I've always been open to the idea of using different languages to describe CSS first and foremost. And I think I've always sort of felt like it seems like the future to me. The idea of having your styles written in the same language as your application, whether it's JavaScript or something else. The idea that you should have a unified, I mean, that's where the title came from, a unified styling language, is like you just have one language for your app and it can compile to different things. So I've always been in favor of that. A lot of it is just the particulars of where I happen to be, because I'm at a big company that bet on CSS modules early, and we scaled that up through components, I think is the key thing. Like we treated components as our main public API, and style sheets are almost like, hopefully you don't have to write too many of these. So we were sort of biased towards like make components the nice part of our API and don't worry too much about how powerful your style sheet layer is. And as we scaled that up further, I think it's almost like the further we went down that road, the harder it would be to convince us like you should throw all of this away and move to something a lot more dynamic and powerful, because we actually felt like we didn't even really need it. We were getting away without it pretty well.
Yeah, so it was just kind of hard to convince yourselves that it was worth the extra runtime and everything else when you didn't have a severe problem with CSS modules.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, it would clearly be better from a developer experience perspective. And that's definitely the trade-off that we were kind of making there. It was like, it felt almost like it would be selfish for us to flip to something like that, because what we had was working okay. We didn't have a big pain point in this area. Like, if we were struggling with it, then I think it's maybe worth taking a hit on, bundle size, performance, those sorts of things to make your development experience easier. But we just weren't feeling a pain point in that area. until a bit later. I guess that's where we jump a bit forward, where I think what broke our model was where we started to move into theming. And we were in pre-CSS variables days where we just couldn't support them. I think they may have existed in those early days, but the browser support obviously was not there. And so that's something where CSS and JS has always kind of been ahead, is that they can polyfill those sorts of features very easily. Whereas if you're working in static CSS, it's very tricky to introduce theming after the fact.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, is like, what's the biggest or what would have been the biggest benefit for you moving over to something like Emotion or styled components or something? And it sounds like I guess the biggest difference between let me put this to you as a question, like what in your mind is the biggest compelling reason to use a CSS and JS library?
It's hard to pick. Maybe for me, the most compelling reason above everything else, and there's lots of good reasons, but the most compelling reason for me is, like I referred to before in the title of my blog post, like this idea of having a unified language for everything. So like if you're building a design system, let's say, and you want to build up your design tokens and you want to create styles from them, but you also want to use them at runtime, maybe for some layout calculations or, you know, whatever it happens to be, like I love this idea that I don't have to switch between these different languages and these different modes. I actually liken it to what we saw with the introduction of Node, where suddenly it was like, okay, I can have the same language across backend and frontend. There's not this sort of arbitrary split in language anymore. And I can create a single file. Like I can write a function and I can use that function on the server. I can use that function on the client. I actually don't care anymore. And I think that's why I've always been interested in CSS and JS, because it's doing the same thing for styles. I can write my tokens, my logic, whatever it happens to be, and I'm not restricted on where this code runs. And I think it just streamlines things. It means like I can write unit tests for my styling logic in a way that if I was using like SAS, I would struggle to do that. I mean, I don't even know. Can you write unit tests in SAS?
Yeah, it's possible.
Maybe you can. Yeah, I mean, and I think I think TypeScript to me is the biggest proof of why this is a good bet, because if you bet on the JS ecosystem, that thing just keeps going up and up and up, right? Mm. And if you've been writing in your styles in JavaScript and TypeScript comes along, suddenly you're writing your styles in a type-safe language, right? And like your editor is telling you that you're getting your styles wrong when passing them around. Like when you're writing reusable functions and things like that are operating on styles, like you've got a type checker at your disposal now. And that's something that when we were back in CSS modules days, where at Seek we were using less for, you know, because that's just what we'd used since forever. Mm-hmm. The deeper I went into that world of like writing real, you know, design system level, reusable mix-ins and so on, like it was getting to the point where I could barely read the code I was writing and it was really heavy duty. And I just felt like I was in a whole different environment compared to when I was in the JS world. Like I felt a lot better supported on the JS side when it came to really complex code. Like if I was writing code like that in JS, what would happen is I'd go, okay, I need to unit test this thing if I'm struggling this hard and I need to test drive it, because it's just not, you know, you write the code, it doesn't work. You tweak it, still not working, and you're just not getting it. And you're like, I need to take a step back and work through it. The tooling in the JS space for dealing with those sorts of problems is so mature. That to me, like that's really the benefit is just bringing all of that together and saying like it'll compile to CSS. Doesn't mean I need to author it in that language. We have different constructs for that in the JS space, and that's actually more ergonomic to me as a developer to not have to jump across these language divides.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes total sense. And so you mentioned like when you've got a complex function that's dealing with CSS, and having the TypeScript stuff in there to help with that, instantly, like we have to remember that like by putting our CSS in JavaScript, we have the ability to make those functions. Whereas like you have mix-ins and stuff, but it's having JavaScript or TypeScript as like something that actually executes and runs and you can debug and stuff. There's just so much benefit to that. But like there are a lot of trade-offs there too. So with the vanilla extract, would you say that that's kind of a marriage between CSS modules and like CSS and JS? Is that kind of what, am I understanding what vanilla extract really is correctly?
Yeah, it's trying to be, it's trying to get the best of both worlds. There's always going to be a trade-off here. Like, so one thing I want to be clear of up front is that, you know, I'm not pitching this library as the solution to all CSS problems and all CSS and JS, you know, should switch to this. But I think it's if you agree with the philosophy, then you should definitely use it, right? So it's a question of what do you think about the trade-offs here? When I was, so I mentioned before about struggling with really complex, you know, preprocessor code and feeling like I just want to write this in a general purpose language that has, you know, better tooling around it. And so one thing I did pretty early on in our journey, like staying in static CSS land, was can I at least use JavaScript to create my CSS, even if it's static? And so what I found was that there was, I actually did some early experiments in this space. I made a Webpack loader that turned JSS code into static CSS. I didn't, it was more of a toy. I didn't end up using it, but at Seek, what I did is I introduced this, this Webpack loader that I found, called CSS in JS loader. And it let you basically use JavaScript as a preprocessor. So you would, and you come up with a file extension like .css.js and you'd target that with Webpack. And then what would happen is that code would get eval at build time. And the exports of that file was just effectively a JSON version of a style sheet. Like it would look exactly like a style sheet, just written the way you would have to write it as JSON. And so that meant that you had the full power of JavaScript to build up that style sheet. And to me, that went a long way in fixing the biggest problem I had with dealing with preprocessors while keeping the runtime characteristics, right? Of like there's zero runtime in that world. It's all written in JavaScript. But yeah, like, I mean, we're talking about TypeScript. The problem with that model was that it basically breaks TypeScript because you kind of like, if you actually look at what's being exported from one file, which is a big JSON blob of a style sheet, and then you look at what's being imported on the other side, it's like what you get from a CSS module. It's like a styles object with the locally scoped classes. Like the two actually don't match up. So when you point TypeScript at this, if you try and convert those two things to TypeScript, TypeScript's like, this doesn't make any sense. Like what you're exporting, what you're importing, they're different types. Uh-huh. And that kind of, that's what forced our hand to have to sort of go back to the drawing board a bit on this whole comp. Like we like the idea of writing it in TypeScript and then running it at build time and exporting the built styles. But we had to sort of rework it so that it was actually type safe. And vanilla, I mean, I don't want to go through the whole journey here. We don't have a huge amount of time, but like vanilla extract was about saying, okay, now that CSS is a lot more powerful, we have CSS variables. We want to like locally scope, not just our classes, but we want to locally scope our variables and export those across the boundary. So CSS modules only exports your class names. We want to export everything that's locally scoped, including your variables. And then that way we have that type safe boundary between the static CSS and the runtime code, but we also have the ability to interact with CSS variables, which sort of reintroduces a lot of that power that maybe we were missing in the old days with static CSS.
Yeah, it sounds like CSS variables or properties, custom properties, it was like the lack of that feature was what drove a lot of people to CSS and JS, is because they just, their hands were tied. They didn't have a whole lot of, especially with theming, that was a big challenge. So lacking that amount of power, we really wanted to go with CSS and JS. But and that solves a lot of problems and many problems that most people don't have. But it just happens to solve all of those extra problems because it's a runtime. But then you're paying a relatively significant cost. And so if you only need a few of those benefits, and then CSS custom properties comes around and you don't need those benefits anymore because that's built into the browser. Now maybe we can take a step back and think, okay, so what, based on what we have offered to us by the platform, what do we need on top of that? And in your mind, for your use cases, vanilla extract kind of gives you everything that you need for a typical web application without the runtime, right?
Yeah. I mean, so like what you're saying is right. Like with to me with the CSS variable angle, where it's really forcing us to sort of rethink, you know, what do we actually need now that the platform is a lot more powerful in this space than it used to be? But I think that, so what we're trying to solve, I guess, is that I'm seeing that we're reintroducing some of the problems that we solved. So, you know, you talk about CSS modules, you know, being so important, and you know, it's because for a lot of people, it introduced this idea of locally scoping the global, typically global things in your style sheet. And
yeah,
that does, I mean, I guess it does two things. One is, of course, it means that you no longer need to worry about naming things in the global scope. That's nice. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have name clashes. But in my mind, like, the real benefit on top of that is the fact that it forces you to make your dependencies explicit between files.
Yeah.
Like, this React component needs this class name from this file. Like, if it has to actually explicitly ask for it. It doesn't just sort of get it for free from the ether, right? And and my concern is that, okay, so I'm seeing that people are rightly recognizing that a lot of this power that's in the runtime, we can move it into CSS variables. Like, I think they're right. The problem is, I think that we're reintroducing this global scope again with variable CSS custom properties. Because what someone will do is they'll write a React component that uses a emotion, let's say. And then what they want to do is stop using the theming system because they want to say, well, let's do the theming in CSS custom properties, right? Makes perfect sense to me. The problem is, what they'll do is they'll just start, in my mind, just hacking like global tokens into their, like, as variable names. And so if you look at it through that lens, right, what you have is a React component that depends on a brand color variable, right? Where did that come from? Nothing in the code says, where does this come? Like, which file created that variable? Does it even exist? Right? Like, maybe I've got a typo and it's actually like spelt color with a U because I'm in Australia, right? Maybe this, like, who knows? And my build won't tell me anything's wrong. My editor won't tell me anything's wrong. It's only when I run the code that, oh, there's no such variable. Whoops, I didn't realize. Right? Like, and so it's like, in trying to take a step forward, we've actually taken a big step back as well, if we're not careful. And so for me, like, what I'm trying to do is sort of, I feel like we're pretty early on that journey, actually, of like going back to CSS variables. And so I'm trying to catch it early and say, if we're going to use CSS variables at scale, which is what's going to happen, we need to make sure that we don't lose the benefits that we've introduced in these other areas with scoped classes. We want scoped variables as well. So if you if you want to use that brand color variable, you have to import it from the thing that created it, right? And especially in the world of TypeScript, that's really useful, that if I get the name wrong or whatever it happens to be, like, my editor will tell me that variable does not exist. It's been deleted, it's been renamed, whatever it happens to be. And so now my CSS variable code can scale as well as my prior CSS code. And the thing is, I feel like the tooling is quite early in this space. Like, I'm not sure who else is doing local scoping of first class CSS variables. I just say there's lots of tools out there that create CSS variables behind the scenes, you know, and kind of try to abstract it away from you. But like, we're giving you first class, you know, you know you're creating CSS variables. You just have a reference to them that you then can pass around your style sheets because they're JavaScript. You can export them over the bridge to the runtime. So now your runtime, if it wants to, can get and set those CSS variables on individual elements. So you get that power, but you're avoiding that global scope as well.
Yeah. And I think that's really useful. And especially being able to import those. And I wrote a blog post that's, what did I call it? Yeah, I use CSS variables instead of React context now that we have CSS variables. And in that, and I'm describing, like, well, what if you get the CSS variable wrong? And I demonstrate how you can put those CSS variable names and have them be generated through your TypeScript. But in mine, you have to duplicate, like, what you have in your CSS as you've defined in your CSS variables, and then duplicate that in your TypeScript. So you just have a mapping between those two that you manually keep up to date. But Vanilla Extract, it does that automatically. And we just have a little bit of time left, but I'd like to get some idea of what Vanilla Extract is for people listening. So how does it accomplish this without any runtime?
Yeah, so it's built on the assumption that you're using a bundler of some sort. And the idea is that, let's say you have a React component and it wants to import some styles. The what you do is you import from a special file extension. I kind of touched on it earlier. Our convention is you name your file .css.ts. And then you have this vanilla extract plugin into your bundler. So we have support currently for Webpack and for ES Build as well. And what happens is, what happens is the bundler notices that you've imported this special file. So instead of just treating it like a regular file, it spins up a separate compilation of that one file and everything it depends on, and then it evals it. And so inside of that file, you import from vanilla extract /css, and so you import the style function. There's a bunch of other ones. There's functions for creating themes and different variants of themes and so on. And so you have the full power of CSS. You just have to call functions to create your styles. And you know, behind the scenes, we basically just catch everything that you define while evaling that file, and we create static CSS files from it. And what we do is everything that you export goes back, gets put in the resulting file that is there at runtime. So it's similar to CSS modules in that there's an object, like a JSON object of everything you exported. So all of your class names, all of your variable names, anything. That's the difference with CSS variables, is you have to explicitly export everything you want to access. But that's just Java. I mean, that's normal for JavaScript, right? And so then what's interesting here is like, you kind of got the best of both worlds in this system, where it's all, you know, your app's all built in TypeScript, let's say. Your runtime code, your style sheet code, it's all TypeScript. You're creating styles and exporting them to the runtime. It all just kind of makes sense on disk. And you have variables, so you've got dynamic stuff, you've got theming. We have APIs for changing the variables at runtime in a type-safe way. And so it means that you've effectively made, like, the way I think about it is it's almost like a preprocessor, where like you might have a SAS file next to your React component. The difference here is you've got a .css.ts file. So it's, you end up having a shared language between them, and you can do a lot more things in terms of, like, you actually export any data structure you want from the stylesheet to your runtime. But you know, it has the same performance characteristics of something like SAS, where it all just runs at build time, static CSS comes out the other end, and at runtime, there's really no work left to do. It's just looking up the pre-built classes that you've created.
Yeah, very cool. And because it's built into the bundler, you get like code splitting for free and stuff too, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we do things like bundle split the themes. So we define it. We have APIs for defining, for our use case, we have a more advanced theming API where you can create a theme contract, and then you can put that in its own file. And then you can have a bunch of separate themes that all import that contract and implement it, and they can be their own files. And then when you're building for production, you can make it so that, well, we only load the theme that you actually use because it's a different brand or what happens to be. And then, yeah, so it just feels like normal code you would write in a bundler, but it's all static CSS out the other end. So it's really trying to get the best of these two approaches in the one setup.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me with CSS and JS, one of the nice things that I really liked was being able to just do things in the same file, which of course you wouldn't be able to do in here. I think I can get over that. But one of the interesting things was moving from CSS and JS to Tailwind, where I kind of started to feel like Tailwind actually felt very similar to CSS and JS, because most of the, like, with CSS and JS, you have just so much power. You're using all of JavaScript. But as I started playing around with Tailwind, I realized I didn't need that much power. All I really needed was a constrained set of atomic values that I could apply, and then I just, you know, depending on the state of my component, I would apply different classes. And it seems like this plays really well into that same idea of kind of atomic CSS as well.
Yeah, well, it's funny you mention it. Like, we're actually actively right now working on a library on top of Vanilla Extract, which, who knows, maybe by the time this comes out, it'll actually be available. Because that's how we use Vanilla Extract at Seek. I mean, when I say use it, we're currently only in a branch of Braid. We don't have it in production yet. Mm. But our prior work works this way, where we have a core set of reusable styles, like, you know, the way Tailwind works, where that's the idea is that should cover 80% of your styles. And you shouldn't have to, in a lot of cases, within our design system, we don't have to write a style sheet for a component. We almost use the fact that we have to write a style sheet as almost like a note that, okay, maybe we've missed something in the core. Like how we try to reach for the common styles first. I mean, to me, that's what the utility first styling mindset is about. Is about saying, can I do it with this constrained set? If I can, because there's in CSS, there's a bunch of ways to do the same thing. It kind of guides you towards, well, try not to do it a million different ways. Like try to use the core set of reusable things. And of course, if you have to, you can go build custom styles, but it just guides you away from that, which inherently kind of makes you think about the size of your final CSS bundle rather than, you know, because the other approach would be, yeah, write all the styles you want and we'll try and atomize it after the fact. You know, that works too, but the problem with that is it forces you to almost not care about unifying your approach on a core set of styles. And so what we want to do with Vanilla Extra, like, so you talked about like the pain of having a separate file, and I definitely hear that. The benefit of our approach being a separate file that we eval in its entirety is that it actually opens the door for people to write abstractions on top. Because as a point of contrast, like the other way you could do static extraction is you use a static analyzer of some sort to look for certain patterns in the code and say, okay, that bit looks like a style. Okay, we'll try and like do some magic to turn that into a class. The problem with that approach is it kind of prevents you from building abstractions on top, right? Because if I wrap that thing in a function that takes arguments, that, you know, that there's a style call from some third party library. If I try and wrap that in some higher level thing to generate atomic classes, let's say, and I actually can't do that because now the static analyzers can't see any style nodes anymore. All it sees is my abstraction. We don't have this problem in Vanilla Extract because the file boundary is what says this is all style. Like everything on this file, from this file onwards, is style code. So you could technically not even import an API from Vanilla Extract. I could import Kent C. Dodds's like atomic utility library and just run that and it will all still work, right? Because some file that you import creates styles and it just gets caught when evaling the whole thing. And so that's what opens the door for us to create these libraries that say, okay, give us some config. We'll give you that atomic set of styles that'll cover your 80% case. And we'll even hopefully like give you APIs for what quickly wiring that up to a component as well. So you can get your like box component or whatever you want to call it. And then you're starting to get to a place where it's like, okay, sure, I have to create separate style sheets for my components, whatever. But ideally, I'm not even doing that half the time. Like half the time, I'm just using my core 80% of utilities over and over again.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Well, I could probably talk with you for another half hour, but we are past our time. So I'm just going to wrap things up here. Actually, was there anything else that we didn't talk about that you wanted to make sure we touch on?
I think that'll do it. You can follow me on Twitter if you want to hear more.
Great. Yeah. And I do recommend that. So we'll have a link to Mark's Twitter handle in the show notes. For our homework for today, we want you to read the blog post that I referenced using CSS variables instead of React context, because it kind of gives you an idea about the CSS variables and that maybe we don't need to use JavaScript for some of the dynamic stuff that we can do now. And also to check out Vanilla Extract, because interesting and innovating things going on there. And it's actually a great time to get involved in this because there's a lot to be done to make this better. Anything to add on that, Mark?
I would love to hear what people think about this. Like, you know, if this is something that you want to try out in your projects, I would love to hear how it goes for you or any thoughts you have, because we're pretty early. We're pretty open to the community here and we're doing things quite differently. So I'm always looking out to hear what people think about it. So please reach out to me. Let me know how you go with it.
Awesome. Sounds good. Hey, thanks so much, Mark, for this. This has been just a pleasure. Thanks everybody for listening and we'll see you all later.